Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome. Welcome to the Mind Medicine Program in association with Mind Medicine Australia. I'm your host, Charles Coves. Great to be with you on this fortnightly program for this wonderful 2 hours where I have a conversation with two guests, one in the first hour, one in the second hour. This show is all about how and why mind matters. This show is about getting insights into mental health issues and health issues of all descriptions. This show is brought to you in association with Mind Medicine Australia. And I want to spend a couple of minutes just telling you about Mind Medicine Australia. We are delighted to support this wonderful charity. Mind Medicine Australia is Australia's leading not-for-profit organisation working on the use of medicinal psilocybin, some people say psilocybin, and MDMA-assisted therapies to treat a range of mental illnesses. Mind Medicine Australia exists to help alleviate the suffering caused by our accelerating mental illness epidemic in Australia through expanding treatment options available to medical practitioners and their patients. Unlike current treatments such as antidepressants, which only manage the illness and can have nasty side effects, psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies have been scientifically proven to be a safe and effective cure for anxiety, depression, end-of-life stress, addictions, and post-traumatic stress disorder after just a short treatment program. These medicines are also currently being researched for dementia, eating disorders, and obsessive-compulsive disorder. Results from over 160 trials indicate that the medicines are safe and non-addictive when administered within a medically controlled environment and lead to remissions in 60 to 80% of patients after just 2 to 3 medicinal sessions in combination with psychotherapy. There have been no adverse events in over 3,000 patients. Both medicines have been granted breakthrough therapy status in the USA to fast-track their approval. This designation is only given to medicines which may prove to be vastly superior to existing treatments. Mind Medicine Australia is dedicated to helping the rapidly emerging global movement to spread awareness and ensure that psilocybin and MDMA are available via the medical system. MMA has commenced the first ever certificate in psychedelic therapies in the Southern Hemisphere. The world-class faculty, which includes Dr. Gabor Mate in Canada, Professor David Nutt in the UK, and Dr. Rick Doblin, is training psychiatrists, GPs, physicians, and other specialists, nurses, social workers, occupational therapists. It was recently described as the world's best psychedelic therapist training program in the world. Graduates rave about the program. The recent pandemic has exacerbated Australia's mental health epidemic, and these treatments of psilocybin and MDMA have the potential to cure millions of people who are suffering. I hope you take an interest in this, bring it to the attention of those who need the help. Go also to the Mind Medicine website, which is mindmedicineaustralia.org.au. And there are both Australian and global events listed on the events website. I promise you it'll be well worth doing. This show is also about passion and its impact on your mental health. And since I'm Australasia's passion provocateur, and I have been for the last 29 years, in fact, last Saturday was the 29th anniversary of me leaving my successful legal career to become Australasia's passion provocateur. When you pursue your passion, your mental health will improve. My definition of passion is that it's a source of unlimited energy from your soul, your spirit, your heart that enables you to produce extraordinary results. I've written two books on the topic, Passionate People Produce, Passionate Performance, and my website is coves.com. So if you want to help people find their passion, or if you want to find your passion, that's what my work is all about, and this show is to remind you of the value of doing so. This show can give you one great idea. This show might give you a way to inspire your kids, your parents, work colleagues, friends, to help them take the next step in their journey to better mental health, better health. If you get one key strategy from each of our guests today, just one, there'll be two strategies that could lead to an enormous change in your life. So before I introduce Harry Marget, I want to point out that, and some of you are listening live and some people will be listening via recording, and it's wonderful that this show is recording. I think it's one of the wonderful things about TNT Radio that every show is recorded. And if there's somebody that you want to hear again later, just go back through all the programs, check out, gosh, so-and-so is interviewed. You can listen to a wonderful conversation, and it's just a terrific resource for all of us. But today, as I'm presenting, it's the 2nd of July, which is 2 days before the 4th of July. And the 4th of July, American Day of Independence, crucial in the development of humanity, crucial in the development of the free world. And I urge you to think about what freedom means to you. I've spent a lot of time on this. My work is all about freedom, the freedom for you to pursue your passion, the freedom for you to live your life. And you come to TNT Radio because TNT Radio is all about truth. It's all about the presenters being free to express freely with free speech what they're on about. It's what America used to be. And these freedom-loving people, there's lots of things happening to reduce its freedom, freedoms in Australia, freedoms in the Western world. And I want you to contemplate in your own life what freedom matters to you. I further point out that governments, when the biggest sanction that they have against you for not observing the law is they put you in jail. They take away your freedom. And so if that's the biggest sanction, then that should remind you that fighting for your freedom is a crucial element to your being a human being. So 4th of July, read the material that's available online. Read the historical references. Don't get so much caught into what America might be doing today, right or wrong. Just understand where 1776 came from. Understand why the 4th of July is important, and understand why here in Australia our population increased massively from 5 million at the end of World War II. Why? Because people came to Australia. Why? Because this was a free, democratic, non-totalitarian country. And if we're not careful, we will head back to totalitarianism. So your job when you're listening to this is to fight for your right to be free. So there you are. There's my editorial for the day. Now, our first guest on today's show, a wonderful, wonderful man who I've known for some years, who I met through my wonderful wife, Julie, Dr. Harry Marget, who is a globally renowned, he can tell us why he's globally renowned, a globally renowned dentist who practices dentistry and set up dental practice in a totally different way. Many years of dental practice, but I'm particularly interested in his views on mental health. He's been a guide to many dentists to help them with their mental health problems, and he has a wonderful perspective on life. Harry Marget, welcome to the Mind Medicine Program on TNT Radio.
Thank you. Thank you, Charles. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, and it's always a pleasure to listen to your shows, which I never miss. They're always absolutely exciting, and thank you for the wonderful introduction. It's nice to be speaking with you again.
Thank you, Harry. Well, we'd love to go back into your past, and one of the questions I want to put to you, because I so admire your ability to not think like most dentists. And I learned early in the piece, particularly from a wonderful marketer called Dan Kennedy, and it's this: If you behave like everybody else in your profession, and I read this when in my early days as a lawyer, or probably, well, I was a lawyer for 20 years, but if you behave like everybody else in your profession, your income will be the average income of that profession. And the average income of most professions is pretty pathetic, I have to say. So, but the profession puts this pressure on all newcomers that this is the way you behave. Harry, how come you didn't behave that way?
I'm glad you asked me that question because, in fact, in the last half an hour, I've just had two dentists here visiting me at my farm down in Arthur's Seat who've come all the way from Queensland to ask me face-to-face, how do we do things differently? How do we not follow in the normal way of doing things? And roughly cutting the hour and a half chat that I had with them was like this. I knew from the word get-go, I suppose, that if I did things, as you correctly point out, like everybody else does, I was going to be like everybody else. And I didn't want that. I didn't want to be a dentist practicing dentistry the rest of my life and saying, oh, what a great guy am I. Look at all the tools I can use. I wanted to be something different. I wanted to have what I would call a business of dentistry, not a dental business. So what I decided to do was step outside the square and see what was there for me. I've never been afraid to do that. I've never been afraid to borrow money to do things. And so from the word go, I said, okay, I have to find some way of doing things differently. I needed a unique selling point. And what I decided to do was to adapt all the things I knew about the actual profession, which I'd learned at university, which was precious little really, and find some way of repackaging it in a way that people found appealing and interesting. And the one thing I found was the biggest thing was people feared the dentist. Why do we fear anything? Why do we fear? Why did my parents fear leaving war-torn Europe and coming to Australia, a country they hardly knew, because they decided they're going to have a lifestyle that was different. And that's why I decided to do things differently in my dental practice life.
Yes, but you weren't afraid. I wrote that down. You've never been afraid. Or you have, you know, this question of fear stops so many people, doesn't it? You know, like it's a shocking thing. F-E-A-R stands for forget everything and run.
Right. I like that one. Well, these were two engineers, believe it or not. They both studied engineering, Charles. They completed their university degrees in engineering, decided to do dentistry. So they moved from being engineers who had not done a day's practice and stepped into this burning ring of fire called dentistry, completed it, then found out that to be a dentist in Queensland, you had to conform to a set of nicety rules. You had to follow what everybody else told you to do. You had to be passionate about being not passionate, which I know wouldn't suit me. I've always been, as you have correctly described, this is where your success comes from, is being passionate about what you do. And in the 2 hours that we spent here talking down on the farm, they said, you know, what makes it possible? How do you get to that point? And I said, well, you've just got to have no fear. You've really got to say that no matter what happens and all the things I did when I introduced orthodontics or general practice a different way or just doing things that didn't conform and still had to suffer the slings and arrows of intolerable pain when I went to these dental meetings, I just said, look, once the spear's gone through your skin, it'll hurt the first time. The second time, it comes out the other side. The skin will heal. You can go on and be brave.
Well, I think this question of mental health, I've coached a lot of people over the years, 29 years of doing so. I've run programs, and so many people are consumed by fear. This is such a problem. Now, I want to paint a model, if you like, for our listeners of where fear comes from. And you know, I often say to people, what's the opposite of love? And they go, hate. I go, no, it's not hate. It's fear, because it's fear that drives hate. So there's this and love comes from your soul, your spirit, your heart, just like passion. Mm. And fear comes from your mind. So that when we're born, psychologists tell us we only have two fears. I mean, I don't know how they interview babies, but this is what they say out there so they can measure in some way. But we're born with two fears, fear of loud noises and fear of falling. All these other fears are learned behavior. And your parents coming from Eastern Europe, or Central Europe, I should say, like my parents came from Hungary, and I'm delighted I can speak to Harry some words in Hungarian. but you know, this is a classic Jewish Central European. There's not much difference between it. You know, I vary so much. I vadi, you know, I'm constantly vadi, but you don't worry. And so this learned behavior, for some reason, you did not learn that behavior. What's your sense of that?
Well, that's a very, very good question. I'm glad you've asked that question, Charles, because that is central to that success. I had two things happen to me very, very, very young. When I was very, very young, 8 years of age, I finally learned what had happened to both my parents during the war. That was very confronting. From that point on, I actually did suffer quite a bit of, mental instability. I was taken to doctors and I would cry a lot and I'd do this. And one doctor, a wonderful Hungarian doctor, actually, his name was Laszlo, I can't think of his last name. He said to me, look, what are you so fearful of? I said, I'm fearful of what happened to my parents will happen again to me. He said, what about this other idea? What about the idea that doesn't happen, but something really good happens to you? I said, like what? He said, well, what happens if you were to become successful at singing or acting or playing the piano or winning money in a lottery? I said, those things can happen to me. And he said, yes, they can. He said, let me show you how. And the following day, he and I, we walked hand in hand down to the local shop. We bought a couple of early tats tickets. You know, they were just tats tickets, just a random sort of a draw. He said, we spent £5 on these tickets. Or he did. I didn't have any money. And lo and behold, Charles, the following Monday, I went to see him. He said, look, he said, you won. And he gave me a £10 note, right? So he said, fear is actually nothing. Fear is actually the thing that you are missing out on, because what you have is the love or the anticipation of something fabulous happening in your life, and then all will be told. And subsequent to that, you know, I've had car accidents where I should have been killed. I fell into the water at 1997 when the bridge collapsed in Israel. I've since won the lottery twice. I've since run a successful dental practice. I've just been involved in some filmmaking. I've just been in a film. I've done things which normally most people would fear. But why didn't I take that road so well traveled? Because I could see what the opposite was. And you correctly pointed it out before when you speak of people about hate and the opposite, etc. What the opposites are the things that you have to grasp. And I found more solace and more energy in grasping the opposite of what I thought was going to happen than just going with the obvious thing of being fearful. Yeah, I suffered a lot because of it. And as one psychiatrist once told me, he said, the truth will set you free, but it will first make you suffer. Once you've got through the suffering, Charles, there's no fear. Once you've had the suffering, you can't do it again because you've been there. You've done it.
Yes, that's beautifully put. The truth will set you free. And I had someone say to me, the pursuit of truth will set you free. Either which way, because if you identify the truth, you have to then pursue it. But that's a great story, everybody. And I urge you to think back to where you started to get these fears. Now, interestingly, this question of how many fears we're born with and what we learn from our parents, there is, and I teach this as well, that we also pick up the cellular memory of our mother and our parent and our father, but certainly our mother in utero, because we are experiencing life. And that's why I call any termination of a baby, of a fetus after 20 weeks, I call that murder. And that is a living being. And so these people who, like in South Australia, where you first arrived or your parents first arrived, and in Victoria, you can have terminations up to full term. It's just outrageous. But in utero, babies are absorbing the fears of the mother. And interestingly, particularly, you know, the concerns and the worries about money. Classic, this deep psychology around money, of fearful about money. So I commend you and that doctor, that Hungarian doctor who helped you to see this illusion. There's another acronym for fear. So I said to you, forget everything and run. And the other common one, I'm sure you know, is false expectations appearing real.
Yeah, that's another good one. Yeah.
And so what that doctor helped you do is don't look at the false expectations, because your expectation that that will happen is false. No. You know, look at this one. This is a better possibility. So we're going to go to a break in a moment. Harry, I want to, after the break, ask you how you have helped specifically, because I know you've done this over the years, helped dentists and others. What advice, what you've helped them in the terms of their mental health? You know, people depressed. What advice you gave them? Because I think you're an wonderful advisor here, and that advice is relevant to people in all aspects of life. You're with Charles Kovess on the Mind Medicine Program. My guest in this first hour is Dr. Harry Marget, a wonderfully successful, risk-taking, entrepreneurial dentist. And we'll be back shortly after a couple of messages.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently. Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
A lot of people may not agree with us right now, but there may come a time when they actually have an issue that affects them, that they don't have the freedom to choose. And if we don't preserve it, we won't have it.
Get to see this for yourself.
We begin this new week with an extraordinary moment in our history. 18 days into this truck convoy, and the federal government invoked a security measure that goes beyond anything seen in this country in the last 50 years.
Banks will be told to freeze the accounts of anyone helping finance the protests. And the owners of vehicles jamming streets will be directly targeted.
Trucking for Freedom, Chapter 1, How We Got Here. Visit truckingforfreedom.com.
If you want the jibby jab, all right, enough, then you've come to the wrong station. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine Program. We mandate that the truth be told. I love that slogan. This show is about truth. This show is about freedom. Without truth, you won't get freedom. So I'm with Dr. Harry Marget. I'm Charles Kovess. Harry, how do you help struggling dentists who have, you know, mental health challenges like depression, like anxiety, like stress?
Thank you, Charles. That's really been very, very close to my heart. I'm going to split it into two groups. Currently, I've got quite a few young female dentists that are contacting me on a very, very regular basis to confess that they are going through some terrible troubles. Unfortunately, most of them seem to have been married to men who have sort of usurped them and taken their money and taken their dignity away by cheating on them, etc. Those are a separate group. But with the young dentists who come to me with their particular problems concerning the running of their business or the stresses and strains they feel of doing it, I usually start off like this. Most of them do come in, funnily enough, Charles, saying they are depressed and they've been taking NDEP and other materials, which you correctly point out, don't cure the problem, just put a Band-Aid over it. What I say to them is this. I said, look, you're probably feeling depressed, and depression is really an absence of happiness. I don't sort of look at it from the point of view of you know, the sadness and the chemical changes that are occurring. I say to them, what is it that you'd really desire? And, of course, the first thing they say is, I'd rather feel happy. So I say, well, what is the thing that concerns you most about what you're doing at work? Oh, well, you know, I don't get on with the staff. The staff don't think I'm any good. I say, well, what you have to do now is show them how good you are. Become a leader. Show them that you can do things. Do something extraordinary, you know, totally extraordinary. And they say, like what? And I remember saying to one guy some years ago in Newcastle, I said, why don't you take them on a bungee jump in New Zealand? And you go first. And you jump off to show that you have absolutely no fear. He said, I can't bungee jump. I'm fearful of heights. I said, go and do it. See how you go. A few weeks went by and I had a phone call from him again. He said, I didn't do the bungee jump, I did something else. I said, what did you do? He said, I went to this guy that teaches people to walk on fire. I said, you're kidding me. He said, no. I said, what happened? Did you burn your feet? He said, funnily enough, I didn't. And he said, the staff suddenly said, turned things around. So more often than not, Charles, I try to use examples of where, you know, other people have felt fear. And then I say to them, I felt like that. I said, I have been there. I was where you were, right? I said, I was the eldest son of European migrant parents who had great expectations for me. You know, they said, you have to succeed. You don't have a choice. You can't fail. And there's great fear and anxiety that gets drilled into you, that I'm sure you may have had moments of that yourself, Charles. Oh, well, hopefully not, but maybe you did. So what I try to do with that first group of dentists is say to them, look, I understand that. Many people can relate to you when they know that you've been where they have been. And so you actually have to put yourself in their shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. You've heard it before. Walk a mile in my shoes, see how you feel. And I say to them, look, I know you think that, you know, I know you think I'm succeeding and I'm you know, very. I do all this sort of stuff really, really well, but I have been where you were. I have been in that situation, and this is how I conquered it. I decided to look at what the opposite was. And with the second group, I sort of had to roll up my sleeves with a lot of them and just say, okay, let's forget about the legal aspects of this for the minute. Let's look at how you feel as a person, right? And, you know, any sort of female that's been in that situation, they have these very strong precepts, don't they? They think if they've been violated or cheated on or whatever, there's something to be said about that. I said, look, don't see it as a failure of yourself. See it as a weakness in the other person. The other person's the one that's lost strength, that's lost validity, that's lost complexity, you know, all that stuff that you had at the beginning of your relationship is not there anymore, then it's not your fault. You know, you are the mother, you are the woman, you are you're the person who feels more than anyone else does. It's not to do with you, it's to do with them. If you cast aside the fact that they have wronged you and heap all the wrong and the failure on them, you're free, you become free. And so in this second group of people, I've kind of sort of had to work on the idea that don't take it to heart, don't take it personally that it's you that failed. It's them that's failed, you've continued on.
What's your sense around forgiveness?
Oh, that's a tough question. That's a very tough question.
Or let me be a bit more specific. Who have you, without naming them, who have you chosen to forgive and why?
Okay, it's still a tough question, but I'm
okay,
going to answer
this. It is a tough question. And, okay. And you know, there's a lovely perspective on that word forgive. It split it into two of four and give. You're giving yourself a gift.
I understand. I sort of hoped at the start of this you weren't going to ask that, but here it is. I know I was prepared for it. Look, I tell you that at the top of the list would have to be all those dentists and business people who knocked me for years and years and years and years. All the people who said, you'll never succeed, you'll never make it, you'll never do it, it'll never work, you'll fail, you'll go broke, including my own father, bless him, who said, when I placed my first Yellow Pages ad and it said, we cater for cowards, he said, you're out of your mind. He said, you're out of your mind. $20,000.
Was that your first ad, we cater for cowards?
That's it, we cater for cowards.
I love it.
My very first ad, you know, when dentists had one line saying Dr. Smith, you know, blah, blah, blah street, I had a whole page saying, no, we cater for cowards. Give us a call. Well, you know, as you probably know from your marketing work with your lovely wife, that, you know, those sorts of things hit home really hard. And it was a big success. The phone rang off the hook. And then my father, bless him, said, well, you might have had some initial success, but it'll never work long term. And then when it did, he came up with some other story. So to begin with, all the business people who ever knocked me and said, you'll never succeed, I forgave them. Then after my marriage broke down because of various reasons, the family of the ex, you know, all attacked me publicly and verbally and whatever. I forgave all of them. And tragically, some of them have now died and some of them have gone and I'm still here. So, you know, there's something to be said about that. I guess also the biggest thing was that there's a lot of people who didn't want to openly criticize me about the entrepreneurship I was using in dentistry and in my personal life, who just said things behind the scenes. I've forgiven all of those people because they've actually come around. A lot of them have now come to see the fact that you know, I'm not this, you know, crazy idiot sort of type person that does that sort of stuff. And more importantly, I guess, in a politically incorrect way, I've decided that those people that never ever really knew me, that just sort of openly criticised me because it was a done thing to do, because they were members of the ADA or they had to follow a certain regime, those people sort of really don't matter to me. I've gone ahead and done what I wanted to do. It's just like with the wine business, you know. Every man and his dog said, "What do you know about wine? You'll never succeed." Well, you know, and here I am with my fifth vintage and it's just about sold out again. So, yeah, these are the people I've forgiven. Everybody that sort of made up their minds that I had to be attacked verbally or whatever or publicly because they didn't understand what I was doing, mostly those sort of people.
Mm. Yeah. That's a beautiful long list, Harry, and I hope listeners understand how powerful it is to forgive. So, you know, we take stuff personally and the courts are full of people who have been upset by stuff done by people who often are driven by fear. So forgiveness is a wonderful resource. Now, we've talked a little bit about what you learned when you were 8 years of age, but I'm really interested that you share with us your education journey, because you've done some pretty way out stuff or made some pretty way out choices for a dentist on your education. Give us a taste of your philosophy on education and what you've actually done, or in the opposite order, what you've done and your philosophy behind it.
Well, what I've done is I took a step right out into the deep water very, very early on. Like, I'd only been a dentist about 5 minutes and I decided to do a master's degree in endodontics. Well, that was a complete waste of time. I spent 2 years at the Royal Melbourne Dental Hospital learning how to stick tiny instruments inside teeth, and that was a complete waste of time because I never intended to practice as a specialist. What I did do very quickly, though, after that was travel internationally a great deal, and I spent time with some very fabulous men. I spent time with fabulous men in dentistry who taught hypnosis. I traveled and studied with people who taught how to do chiropractics, how to do physiology, pharmacology. I spent time with internationally acclaimed wrestlers who then became dentists. I spent time with people who knew all about the money market and real estate. I spent time with Arabic families in the deserts in Israel, understanding why they felt the way they felt. I spent another 2 to 4 years learning how to do implants by traveling to Sweden and back. But most of the time that I was learning, I was trying to learn how to be a better spokesman about everything to do with life and validity. One of my mother's main goals when she brought me up was, she said, "I want you to be a positive person." So the time that I spent on actual dental education was probably the first 5 to 10 years. The rest of the time, I've really spent time going out, learning how to chat with people, how to become part of a greater conversation. I spent 2 years going backwards and forwards to Los Angeles to an acting school because I felt that acting was essential to being a dentist. You needed to know how to stand in front of people and pretend. So those 2 years were just amazing. And I got to meet people like Seinfeld and Jerry Lewis and some of these guys. 1.5 years in Rome being educated by Professor Itanio Muratore on how to live life at the top of the tree. He was a wonderful Italian implantologist. But that's not what he was teaching me. He was teaching me how you have to be a man who appeals to women, Harry. You've got to be exciting. Sex is important, you know. That's, and I said, "What's that got to do with me being a dentist?" He said, "Nothing. It's nothing at all." Then I spent time with a guy in Los Angeles who showed me how to do lingual brackets, you know, brackets on the insides of teeth. And when I went back to finish my course and do his exams, he was dead because he'd taken an overdose of cocaine at a party the night before that I got there. What was my philosophy behind the education? I wanted to be a person who could go on a quiz show and answer questions. And as you know, I've been on a few. I wanted to be a person who was more knowledgeable about life in general. Why do people learn to dislike? Why do people learn to love? How do people learn to love? How could I learn to write poetry and songs? And these were another thing that I did. I spent time with people in the UK who were musically orientated and write poetry. My philosophy, Charles, there's never, ever a way of not getting enough education to read books. And I would say that the highlight of my life, and I'm probably going to get a bit emotional now, was that I was in Israel in 1984, and I was staying at the Poets Society, which is a unique establishment of wonderful writers and people in Israel, in Jerusalem, just underneath the big Dutch windmill. And I was sitting outside. I'd taken my guitar with me. I was playing a song, and a young woman came up behind me, and she tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, "I know who you are. I need to talk to you." And this was none other than the daughter of Primo Levi. Primo Levi, that charismatic man who wrote those books about his horrible life, his great life as a chemist first in Italy and then unfortunately as a prisoner of the Nazis. And he wrote three books which are just unbelievably endless. You cannot put them down. And she sat down with him and she said, "I know who you are." She said, "I know what you've endured. I know what it's done to you. I know what it's meant to you." But she said, "You're here now and you're here in this place because this is the time when better things will happen. And this is meant to be a moment in time that you will always remember." 2 days later, Charles, I was a guest of the Israeli army up on the Masada mountaintop at nighttime. At nighttime, they induct all the new captains and generals. You know, it's a torchlight ceremony. And during that ceremony, and after that ceremony, believe it or not, I actually believed that I was in the presence of Primo Levi himself, and I could hear his words. Mm-hmm. So there's education that we do, Charles, that is material and matter of fact and black and white, but the greater education is sort of stuff that you and I and your lovely wife talk about without actually using words. It's the feelings, it's the emotions, and it's the energy that goes behind those deeper, heartfelt emotions that really matter. And they are the ones today that at this age of my life, Charles, I'm searching for, earnestly looking for, and trying to achieve. And if I may say so, I believe I'm allowed to say what I think on this radio station. Well, this is why I'm a big believer in the program that we are providing now to help people. When I was at university, I was given some LSD, and that LSD allowed me to do a number of things which we don't need to discuss in terms of tripping. But what I did get to see was the truth, the emotions and the feelings behind what was actually going on in my life that I didn't speak about, that I couldn't speak about, that were just there. They were behind the scenes, the sort of things I've just alluded to. And so I know that in my mind, the truth is that these sorts of programs and these sorts of researches and these sorts of things need to happen to help people who have this blackness, this darkness because of mental illness, because of a number of things that have happened to me. I was thrown out of a car when I was 13. I survived. The other three people died. I was on the bridge that fell into the water in Israel. Five people died. I'm still here. I'm still trying to produce this message, and I think I know why. It's because this is the message that we need to get out there, the one behind the words, behind the feelings, behind the emotions that really matter to us as human beings. I'm sorry for going on so long.
You didn't go on so long at all. That was beautiful. I want you to contemplate hungry, and I want you to contemplate heroes. Are you aware who the greatest heroes are in Hungary? What category of people are considered, you know, what category of people dominate the heroes in Hungary? I'm not sure about other countries. The answer is poets.
Yeah.
And I've got to dig, I've saved this quote somewhere that, in fact, what you say, it is poets who drive revolutions. It's not militia. It's not lawyers, or maybe sometimes it's lawyers, but you know what you shared then on poetry, and I've never understood, you know, I've never been a lover of poetry other than limericks, and I can sprout 50 of those off the top of my head, but I, you know, I have that feeling that you're talking about. I'm going to read a quote, you know, after we come back from the break, very relevant to poets, but I just want you to contemplate, and I wonder what it's like for Israel, about the hero status of poets. What have you learnt about that?
An enormous amount. I don't know the answer to your question about Hungary. I mean, I haven't really studied that particular poetry, and I haven't really studied a lot of poetry from other countries, but the secret status of poets in Israel is enormous, because many of the great leaders, the Golda Meirs, et cetera, and the Dayans, and the first president of the country, these were all people who, as their core, recited poetic pieces of verse, not just from the holy books, from the Torah, but mainly because of Kabbalah. Kabbalah, as you know, is the mystical study behind the stories, the mystical stories of mysticism and imagination and clarity.
And myth.
Mm. And these are the things that drive people to think more clearly about these sorts of subjects.
Yeah. Yes, that's I wrote a poem related to COVID recently, and it goes, COVID is a quite simple virus that came to stick it right up us. Our governments went nuts. They locked us in our huts, and now we're as poor as Cyprus. So there you are. There's my spot of limericks and COVID at the same time. I'm with Dr. Harry Marget. We're going to go for a short break now. I'm Charles Kovess on the Mind Medicine Program, and you're on TNT Radio.
Here we go again. The United Nations is now declaring an ocean emergency, a new environmental threat.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, the former president of Socialist International, now says the world must turn the tide of rising sea levels, ocean heating, acidification, and plastics pollution. Here he is explaining.
Today we face what I would call an ocean emergency. We must turn the tides.
If we did face an ocean emergency and had to rely on the United Nations to save us, the oceans would be doomed. This is yet another in a long string of emergencies. Everything from the climate emergency to the plastic pollution emergency to now they're calling the ocean sea level rise emergency. This is more UN propaganda. One thing's for sure, if the United Nations declares an emergency, they are seeking more power and more control. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
Emergency, police fire or ambulance?
Yeah, I'm just passing through.
Police fire or ambulance?
I can see a whole lot of smoke.
What town are you calling from?
I'm on a mobile phone.
I need the town?
Yes, there it is. I can see flames. There appears to be a kid or something at the window.
It's okay.
You guys are better out. Serious.
Hello?
000's sole job is to connect you to emergency services. If you stay focused and just answer the prompted questions, you'll get help faster.
As Joe Biden negotiates his way out of the room,
we don't negotiate with the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine Program. We're talking poetry here and its relevance to your mental health and general health. And Harry shared some wonderful truths before the break. And Harry, I'm a fan of Buckminster Fuller, as you know, a man who was awarded 47 honorary doctorates before he died in 1983, an American. Mm. And he was a big fan of E.E. Cummings, a poet who only ever used lowercase for his name. and Buckminster Fuller, in his final book, A Critical Path, before he died, he wrote, he included in the foreword, that his own foreword to the book, a piece called A Poet's Advice. And I think this is a beautiful piece to immerse ourselves into, because it's a powerful message at the time that we find ourselves in the world and the relevance of poets. So here it is. A poet is somebody who feels and who expresses his feelings through words. This may sound easy. It isn't. A lot of people think or believe or know they feel, but that's thinking or believing or knowing, not feeling. And poetry is feeling, not knowing or believing or thinking. Almost anybody can learn to think or believe or know, but not a single human being can be taught to feel. Why? Because whenever you think or you believe or you know, you're a lot of other people, but the moment you feel, you're nobody but yourself. And Harry, this is a powerful message for you with what we've heard from you so far.
Very, very. Yeah.
To be nobody but yourself in a world, including the dental world, which is doing its best night and day to make you everybody else, means to fight the hardest battle which any human being can fight and never stop fighting. As for expressing nobody but yourself in words, that means working just a little harder than anybody who isn't a poet can possibly imagine. Why? Because nothing is quite as easy as using words like somebody else. We all of us do exactly this nearly all of the time. And whenever we do it, we are not poets. If at the end of your first 10 or 15 years of fighting and working and feeling, you find you've written one line of one poem, you'll be very lucky indeed. And so my advice to all young people who wish to become poets is do something easy like learning how to blow up the world. Unless you're not only willing but glad to feel and work and fight till you die. Does this sound dismal? It isn't. It's the most wonderful life on earth. Or so I feel. E.E. Cummings.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
To be nobody but yourself in a world that is constantly trying to make you somebody else. So that's what you are testimony to, Harry.
Thank you. Well, I would like to feel that that is actual, and if it's coming from you, Charles, it must be. So I'm happy to hear that, because you've done the same. You've actually walked a very, very path by yourself. You've walked on hot coals, and you're still here with no burns.
I have walked. I've done the Tony Robbins program three times, Harry, and it's a great exercise to do something that we worry so much about. Now, Primo Levi, I've heard his name. I haven't read any of his books. Can you tell our listeners, you know, what those? Because one of the questions I was going to ask you is, what books do you recommend to people?
Good. Well, I'll talk about Primo Levi first. Primo Levi was a young Italian pharmacist at the start of the Second World War. And when Nazi Germany invaded Italy, he unfortunately was one of the first people taken away to those horrible places. And he spent most of his youth in these terrible places, and finally got liberated towards the end of the war when he moved back to Rome and continued his work advancing the cause of pharmacy for the good of people, mainly in the areas of medicines and psychotropic sort of drugs, etc. He wrote extensively about his time in the camps. He wrote about how the positivity of thought got him through, how he could see himself after the war, and where he would be and how he would express himself. So even though he wrote prose, if you read through the books, and if you do, and I'm happy to give them to you, I've read them many times now, I'm happy to lend them to you. The poetry that he wrote was more or less at the beginning and the end of every chapter. He would write something that sort of poetically, not so much rhyming poetry, but would poetically describe whichever the feeling that he had or that he was alluding to. One of the things that he said primarily was that feeling beyond where you are. So his thing was a bit like that guy in Czechoslovakia that wrote, you know, if you know that you can feel these other, and he would talk about things like food. You know, he would say that when he was hungry, he would remember the wonderful pastas and sauces that his mother made when they were living together. So Primo Levi's biggest gift was not so much that he wrote about his wartime experiences and how he used his chemistry knowledge to figure out what was going on in his head and his heart, etc., but also what he was going to do after the war. And there's his one of his greatest geniuses was to tell his fellow inmates in that situation about, look, don't you remember how we used to walk down the piazza and we'd go and have a coffee and a mandarino and this and that, these sorts of areas. So one of the things that Primo Levi will always be regarded for is the positivity, the willfulness that he had. He was all of those things and much, much more. How he could imagine there was no pain. He could imagine that there was no hunger. He could imagine there was no, he used the words, I can't remember in English, but in Italian, consecutive, things that don't necessarily need to follow. He said, you know, feeling like this doesn't necessarily follow that you'll feel like this later. This was some of the imagination or imagineering, he called it, imagineering. If this is how you can imagine you will be after this is all this tragedy is over. And so sadly though, and this is relevant to this discussion, he was at a point in his life when the memories of what happened to him came flooding back, all the terrible, terrible things that he'd suffered. And sadly, he threw himself off a balcony in Rome and committed suicide because the thing had got to him. Now, subsequently, people have found that, you know, he was denied modern drug therapy or modern medicine. He was being a chemist. He was unhappy with the idea that people would put, even anything from polypeptides to any sort of serotonin releasing type product into his body. And look, it's not factual. It's written, but it's not stated that this is what caused his death. But most people would know that he became so intensely depressed after he'd released these books and all this material that he couldn't handle his life anymore, and he committed suicide. What do I remember him for? I remember him for the fact that there was a presence. There was a knowing. I call it a knowing that he tried to include with other people, which is what I try to do when I teach to these dentists who come to me who were so worried. I try to include the fact that there is a knowing, there's a situation that will be present after this that will be very, very good, very, very much more fun, etc. A bit like all the lovely things that you do, you know, the things you enjoy, the coffee, your cycling, your lovely wife, all the people that adore you and speak to you. I said, these are the things you should look forward to.
Yes, it's as you were saying that you touched on it earlier with mental health, mental illness, and post-traumatic stress disorder is a classic case where Mind Medicine Australia is doing its work, and it's doing wonderful work. And whilst they're focused on psilocybin and MDMA, I also am involved in the cannabis industry with industrial hemp, which is cannabis, but medicinal cannabis. And when you are talking to dentists, and I'm amazed now how readily available medicinal cannabis is. And medicinal cannabis is also a wonderful way to reduce those anxieties, to help sleep. Chronic pain is another wonderful. Medicinal cannabis can really relieve chronic pain. And understanding, so those of you who didn't listen to that Stephen Ng interview, Stephen Ng, it's most instructive about what medicinal cannabis can do. And as you're talking about Primo Levi, I thought, wow, if only we could get that to him. And this is a beautiful natural product, like given to us by God. So I urge people to become aware of it. There are now 50 medicinal cannabis clinics in Australia. There are thousands of GPs. You just go to your GP and say, I need some medicinal cannabis. I'm suffering from stress, anxiety, chronic pain. So there you are.
Not that easy to get, unfortunately.
I thought it was difficult as well. I was referring people to different places, but now it's very easy. You can go to a GP. They look it online, bang, and literally look up medicinal clinics, everybody, in Australia, if you're here. Harry, you've been a great commitment. We've got a minute or so. What course would you recommend to people these days? You know, I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins, so any course by Tony Robbins is fine by me. What other personal development, mental health programs, facilities have you found to be valuable? Or just give me one, perhaps, if you can think of one.
Yeah.
If you can't, the other question I had for you was how do you handle the stresses in your life? What's your process for handling stress?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that question. I'm glad you asked that question. First of all, the biggest stress that I've ever had in my life has been people. People that I've brought into my circle only to find that they were not so friendly. I take a new view. My view is very simple. people that add value to my life, I include. People who don't add value to my life, Charles, I dispense with. I have nothing to do with. And that has been a big, big, big success for me. And one of the courses I did listen to recently was how to determine the value of certain people in your life. I don't know where I got it from, but it was a great course. It was 3 or 4 hours of listening material, and it's just that. You know, people who don't add value to your life, you don't include. People that add value to your life, you treasure. So Mrs. Coves and Mr. Coves, you are two treasured people in my life, let me tell you.
Well, that's very, very kind of you to say. Another short form version to say that I learned is people either add to you, multiply you, subtract from you, or divide you. Do not keep people in your lives who subtract or divide you.
So I like that one.
Plus multiplication, division, subtraction. Harry, that's beautifully said. People are the greatest stress. That's a wonderful lesson for people. You don't have to be stuck with the people, you know. Thank you, Dr. No. Harry Margett. Congratulations on your magnificent career, on your insights. Well done on the work that you literally give to other dentists, helping them with their challenges. I'm Charles Coves. This is the Mind Medicine Program in association with Mind Medicine Australia. And great to have you here this hour, and we'll be back after the news. And Harry, bye-bye, and I'm looking forward to this vintage of wine.